Hello, I'm Arnold Hamilton, editor of the Oklahoma Observer.
And I'm Marianne Martin, and this is ObserverCast, your weekly deep dive into Oklahoma politics and policy, powered by the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation.
On Tuesday, voters will decide the fate of State Question 820, the proposal that, if enacted, would make Oklahoma the 22nd state to legalize recreational marijuana. Like last century's battles over legalizing the sale of mixed drinks, State Question 820 has drawn strong opposition from the usual suspects, moral crusaders like Southern Baptists, and from members of the prison industrial complex, prosecutors, sheriffs, private contractors that supply the state's crowded prisons and jails. But it would be a mistake to focus on State Question 820 as just another sin proposal. It's actually a criminal justice reform measure aimed at making Oklahoma smarter and fairer on crime. To help us unpack all that State Question 820 entails, former Seminole State Representative and ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel joins us for this week's ObserverCast to separate the reality from the campaign rhetoric. Ryan is a senior advisor for the pro State Question 820 campaign and, full disclosure, a longstanding member of the Oklahoma Observer Advisory Board. So, Ryan, great to have you with us. Let me start by asking, why this proposal? Why now? A lot of folks seem to think we already have de facto recreational marijuana under the state's medical marijuana system. Just visit a doctor, get a prescription, pay a couple hundred bucks for a state license, and voila, you're in business.
Well, the Tulsa World, in their endorsement of State Question 820 just yesterday, they called our current system weed by the wink, which, you know, a nod to the old liquor by the drink, which is liquor by the wink in Oklahoma. So for folks that, you know, are familiar with Oklahoma's prohibition laws, we didn't end prohibition whenever the federal government ended prohibition. We had a multitude of layer of alcohol prohibition that we've only recently begun to modernize. But we don't have to do a history lesson there, for everyone. But yeah, you know, I think that the reason that we need to do this now is because even though there's this perception that anybody that really wants to have a medical marijuana card in Oklahoma. I have a medical marijuana card in Oklahoma. Everybody that wants one can get one because we have some of the most loose standards on, you know, what qualifies for a medical condition that will get you a medical card. But I think that, you know, we got to step back from that. You know, I think first of all, that it's a pretty privileged position to be able to say that because getting a card costs you time and money. I visited with a grandmother yesterday who she has her medical card, but she has gone and bought medical cards for all of her grandchildren. I think five grandchildren. I think it's like, you know, she's, you know, basically, you know, by the time you pay for your license and you get your doc, you're looking at like $280 or better. And she's done that for all these grandkids of hers because they can't afford it, but they can afford going to jail, getting arrested. Even less. The other thing that they can't afford to do is to have to find and source marijuana from the illicit market. Because the thing that I hope voters will take into account whenever they walk into that voting booth is that this isn't a question on whether or not we are going to have marijuana in Oklahoma. Marijuana is here. Marijuana was here before 788. The biggest difference for folks like myself that used marijuana before 788 is, you know, now I'm able to walk into a dispensary and buy a marijuana product that's tested, that's sourced from, it's tracked from the time that it's grown to the time that it comes to me as a patient. It's tested for heavy metals, for pesticides, for other contaminants and other drugs. That is not happening from the illicit market. When you go buy from the illicit market, they're not checking your ID. They're not selling you anything in a childproof container, and they're sure as heck not giving you a tested product. And I hear this thing, oh, well, marijuana today isn't anything like marijuana in the 60s. I didn't have marijuana in the 60s, but you know, I had marijuana in the late 90s and early 2000s. And the big difference from today and then, and I assume even from the 60s, is that the marijuana that I have in 2023 doesn't have, it's not riddled with pesticides. It's not riddled with a bunch of heavy metals. And fortunately, you know, we hadn't seen up to that point a lot of cross contamination with other drugs that may have been at the illicit market source of that marijuana. So there's a big safety issue at hand right now. So we have marijuana. It's going to be here. It's just a matter of what are we going to do about it. And so that's we're leaving. So you got this, you know, this grandmother spending about $1,000 or better to basically buy her grandkids immunity from arrest and immunity from prosecution. To me, that is not the kind of criminal justice system that we should have. It should not be a pay-to-play system where the person that has the ability and the time and the inclination to go get a card is immune from arrest and prosecution. And somebody who doesn't, they can be arrested and they can be prosecuted. I saw a study earlier this week that an estimated 100,000 Oklahomans, so over and above our patient population, 100,000 Oklahomans are regularly using marijuana in the state of Oklahoma. Every one of those Oklahomans is at jeopardy of being arrested, is at jeopardy of having their kids potentially removed from their homes for no other reason than just having the marijuana. It doesn't matter whether they're being responsible or not. And I hear prosecutors every day say, nobody in Oklahoma goes to jail or prison because of marijuana, for small amounts of marijuana anymore. And we just know that that's not true. Now, criminal justice data in Oklahoma is awful. And that's another project that I've been working on with Representative Melody Blancett out of Tulsa for the last couple of years to try to fix that. But we haven't fixed it yet. And so it's hard to get good data. So the best data that we've got goes up to about 2021. So this is after 788 passed, after medical marijuana passed, and after 780 passed, which made simple possession of all drugs a misdemeanor. Even then, 4,500 people were arrested in 2021 for small amounts of marijuana. Those arrests affect disproportionately lower income folks, lower income people in rural Oklahoma. African Americans are arrested at five times the rate of their white counterparts. So we know that people are still getting in trouble for marijuana. And then the next thing that they'll tell you is, well, it's just a misdemeanor. Nobody is lining up to get a misdemeanor. The fines associated just with a misdemeanor are north of $2,000. That doesn't even cover the cost of hiring an attorney. That doesn't cover the cost of all the time and expenses that go into that. All of the programs that the DAs are going to want you to enroll in as part of your misdemeanor prosecution or plea or conviction, it will turn your life upside down. And you still have that on your record. You still have a misdemeanor on your record. So I think that there's a sense that because we have a pretty permissive medical program in Oklahoma, that we have ended prohibition. And we have not ended prohibition. We still have thousands, and according to this report, 100,000 plus Oklahomans in criminal jeopardy. We still have an illicit market that is able to sell marijuana to people that don't have medical cards and can't go into a safe, regulated, and taxed dispensary. And we also have around 60,000 Oklahomans that have old marijuana convictions for small amounts of marijuana on their records. That state question 820 would create a simple and affordable way to have those expunged. That's another thing that I hear from DAs is, well, there's already an expungement process. These people can already get their records expunged. The people that say that to me are either the prosecutors that have made a career out of putting people in jail or prison for small amounts of marijuana, or lawyers, many of them criminal defense lawyers, who charge $3,000, $5,000, sometimes more, to a client to go get an expungement. That's why there's 60,000 of those sitting out there. If it was easy and affordable, don't you think those folks would have gone and got those things off the record? In particular, because prior to 780 passing in 2016, a lot of those possession charges are felonies. I mean, things that the amount of marijuana that I have in my house right now, prior to 2016, definitely a felony. And so you've got all those old felonies that today, you know, I can have it in my pocket. As long as I'm responsible with it, and I'm under my possession limits, I'm doing something freely and responsibly that other Oklahomans have had their lives turned upside down about. And so that's why I thought that 820, that's why I think that 820 is necessary now. There's really no reason to continue to wait so that we've got these two classes of Oklahomans out there that are walking around, those that, you know, have bought their cards and those that haven't. And there's folks that, you know, they might not ever think about using marijuana. They might not think, oh, well, I need to do this proactively. You know, they might be at a party and somebody hands them a joint, or, you know, somebody gives them some gummies and they say, hey, you're having trouble sleeping. Take these gummies with you. Try that. And then all of a sudden, you know, if they get pulled over and they've got those gummies in their pocket, and they are, they don't do what I would advise them to do, like not to consent to a search or, you know, talk to the police during a traffic stop beyond being polite and giving a very basic identifying information. And they end up with those gummies, they end up in criminal jeopardy. So again, I understand where people are coming from, that we've got, you know, rec already. But for a lot of Oklahomans, it doesn't feel like that.
So you have a situation here where the rhetoric is fairly heated on this. It's interesting to me, and I, you know, maybe I'm wrong about this, but it sure seems to me we've had an awful lot of busts of criminal illegal grow operations in recent months when it became apparent that this was going to be on the ballot, which just, I thought the timing of that was interesting. I'm not really a conspiracy theorist at heart, but it just sort of, you know, it does sort of make you wonder. But then you have people in the legislature like Senator McCourtney, you know, standing up and saying, well, you know, boy, it's just, it's terrible out there in rural Oklahoma these days. You have people walking around with Walmart bags full of with $100,000 in cash in their Walmart bags, and you know, and sort of creating this great fear around this process. I got to thinking, how many $100 bills are the max that the Treasury is printing these days? You know, that's an awful lot of bills to get $100,000. I don't know who stopped and counted, you know, those people. I've never seen anybody carry a Walmart bag around with anything but Fritos and Dr. Pepper in it, you know? I mean, it creates a situation here where you've got two groups, it seems to me, of people potentially headed to the polls. Those who see the wisdom of the criminal justice reforms on the one hand and the ridiculousness of continuing to treat this like it's a gateway illicit drug. That's going to bring society to its knees. And on the other hand, you have people who, you know, blithely, for, you know, whether it's religious reasons or whatever, just think, oh my God, you know, we already have liquor by the drink now. We already have medical marijuana. This is just another trip down the road to, you know, to hell for Oklahoma. So who turns out on Tuesday?
Well, I mean, that's the best question. That's the million-dollar question. That's $1 million in a Walmart bag question, because it's never happened in the nation of all the states that have considered recreational marijuana ballot measures. It has never been the case that a recreational marijuana ballot measure has been the only thing on a standalone ballot. That's it. This will be a first for that. And from what we can tell, this is the only time in Oklahoma history that there's been a special election, a special statewide election, to vote on a ballot measure. So it's happening in March, you know, the Tuesday before spring break. I've been watching the weather. It looks like it, you know, it looks like we're at least okay for right now. What was it? Was it a derecho? What was it called? I don't know. I'm, we don't seem to have any of those headed to us for Tuesday. But, you know, that's the million-dollar question. I think that there are a lot of Oklahomans that recognize, you know, I've heard a lot of reasons from folks why they're voting for this. I've heard, you know, we've got rec already, which I disagree with that proposition. But they'll say, we've got rec already, why not get the money from it? And the money is significant. Our analysis shows but the analysis done by economists at Vicente Cederberg, who have done these economic analysis and forecast in several other states, $821 million projected over the first 5 years. Then you'll see the markets stabilize after that, because you're going to see a drop in the medical market, not entirely, but you'll see some drop in it. You'll see some increase in the recreational market. But they'll eventually stabilize, and that usually happens at about 5 years out. And the anticipation there is about $100 million in annual revenue, annually recurring revenue coming into the state of Oklahoma. That does not even count the municipal and county sales tax dollars that are going to be generated. Just last year alone, even with medical, OMA said that there was around $80 million collected at state, county, municipal sales tax. That's an enormous investment in local communities. I mean, so this isn't just about raising money to make sure that, you know, kids like my son, who goes to one of the best public schools in the state, but still has to share a science textbook and can't bring it home with him at the end of the day for his homework. But also, you know, potholes, law enforcement at the local level, roads and bridges, streets, you name it. Those communities are going to benefit enormously from this. They already have. You know, one of the best decisions that the governor Stitt ever made was whenever he said that he decreed that marijuana businesses were going to be considered essential businesses for the purposes of being able to stay open during the COVID lockdown, the initial lockdown. That was good, both in terms of public health, because we didn't have a run on dispensaries. We saw in Colorado, where they weren't essential businesses, you had lines going around the street, and it was getting people to congregate right at the time when we didn't want people to congregate. But this unanticipated benefit was people shopped at those dispensaries in large numbers during the pandemic, and you were generating enormous amounts of sales tax revenue in these local communities at a time when they were seeing other sales tax revenues hurt because of the lockdown. I will stand by this, that those medical marijuana sales tax dollars kept a lot of towns, especially small towns, afloat during the early months of the pandemic, and their ability to invest in core services at the local level. So, you know, they'll say, well, we've got rec already, we ought to take the money. There are a lot of folks that will say, why aren't we, you know, our medical program right now is limited to Oklahoma patients. Why aren't we taking advantage of the fact that we have, you know, states around us, including Texas, that don't have a medical program, let alone a recreational program? Well, Texas has a medical program, but it's nothing. There's nothing of note there. But we're going to be able to tax those Texans whenever they come up to Hochatown in the summer. I saw a deal that said that, like, Hochatown has, like, and I haven't been to Hochatown, but people have told me that when you go there in the summertime, almost all the license plates are from Texas. And I saw, I think it was the Department of Tourism said that around 30,000 people a week go to Hochatown on the weekends, on every weekend during the summer. They're walking into our liquor stores. These Texans are walking into our liquor stores and they're buying alcohol, paying taxes on it. They're walking into our grocery stores, and, you know, thank goodness, you know, if the opponents of State Question 820 had their way, you wouldn't be able to walk into a grocery store and get, you know, your strong beer and your wine. They're walking in there and paying taxes. I want them to be able to walk into a dispensary, show their ID that they're over 21, pay a 15% excise tax, You know, again, medical stays the same. I'll still pay my 7% sales tax. But if you're just 21 and over, you don't have a medical card, you're paying 15% excise tax. I want to take that, and I want to take those Texas tax dollars, and I want to put them into Oklahoma services. Even maybe states around us.
Maybe it's all those Texans who are coming into Oklahoma with their Walmart bags stuffed full of cash.
Maybe that's it. I mean,
maybe that's who the senator is seeing.
You know, maybe it's new. It's fashionable in North Dallas. Maybe, you know, we're, you know, Arnold, maybe you and I just are not up on
that would be a Neiman Marcus bag, I'm afraid.
Yeah. But, you know,
why would people bother to get a medical license then in the future in Oklahoma? Will that just sort of wither on the vine?
I mean,
states have successfully run both programs. So,
I'll keep my medical card. I'll keep my medical card because I want to pay that lower tax rate. There are slightly larger possession limits with a medical card, though I'll tell you, I have never even come close to the possession limits that I'm allowed under my medical card. And I think most medical patients never come close to those limits either. But I think that, you know, at some point you start to do the math. Does paying the, you know, $280 that it takes to get your license, do you save that in taxes by paying 7% versus the 15% if you don't have your license? The other thing that it will help, and this happened to me last year. I am a two-time cancer survivor, knock on wood. And I had a radiation procedure last September. I had a radiation procedure that was successful. But, you know, when you're doing all that, your life is crazy. And I got a notice from OMMA that my license was about to expire and I need to renew it. Like, okay, so, you know, I'm doing that. And I send in my renewal and I forgot to take off my eyeglasses in the picture that I sent them. And just like with your passport, your OMA photo can't have eyeglasses. So they rejected it and they were real nice about it. It was really efficient. But, you know, they sent back a deal and said, this is the problem with your license application. You need to fix it. So I fixed it, sent it back in. Well, in the meantime, my license expired. So, you know, according to the letter of the law, if I continue to possess the marijuana that I had, you know, just the day before, whenever I had a valid license, I could have been arrested. I could have had my law license could have been in jeopardy. And according to the opponents of State Question 820, I should have lost custody of my kids, which, you know, that's, you know, a real benefit. I mean, if you find folks like that, that find themselves in a gap, you know, does it make sense that by operation of law, you know, I'm totally fine, legal, responsible marijuana patient over here, and then right over here I'm potential misdemeanant or felon? That's nuts. Now, the opponents of State Question 820, I don't think that it's hyperbole at all to say, because it sounds like it, but I really don't. I've listened to what they've said over and over and over in this campaign. Everybody from the DA in Tulsa County, Steve Kunstweiler, former Governor Frank Keating, who has just gone, you know, full reefer madness on this deal. And they don't want to take us to 2018, to June 1st, 2018, when we didn't have State Question 788. These folks want to take us to 1918. They really do. They genuinely see prohibition to, you know, not just marijuana, but tobacco and alcohol is the best way to deal with all of these substances. They genuinely do. I find it deeply offensive as a dad, because I approach everything that I do through 820, well, anything in my life that I do through the perspective of a dad. And, you know, child safety in all of this is paramount to me. So when I hear Frank Keating lie, and I don't say that lightly about anybody, but especially a former governor, but when I hear Frank Keating lie and tell Oklahomans But state question 820 will make it harder for courts to intervene to take kids out of dangerous situations. Not only is he not telling the truth, because the standard that courts use today, right now, before 820 passes, is the exact same standard after 820 passes, the exact same one. We literally copied and pasted it out of Title 63 in Oklahoma law into the ballot measure. It's the exact same. And essentially what it says is, if you are lawfully in possession of marijuana, that fact by itself can't be used against you for child negligence, child endangerment, or a custody issue. I mean, just like if you've got a pack of Coors Light in your refrigerator, you know, the police can't come kick your door down and take your kids away from you, because the simple fact alone that you've got Coors Light in your refrigerator isn't indicative of you creating a dangerous environment for your children. Although I'd argue that alcohol is much more likely to create a more dangerous environment for kids, but you know, we could talk about that another day. The after state question 820 passes, if you're lawfully in possession of marijuana, then the government can't hold that against you. What Frank Keating is saying, and he's not mincing any words about this, is that he believes that simple possession and responsible use of marijuana is an inherent danger to children and should be the basis for the government to step in and charge you with a crime and or take your children away. That's terrifying. And it's frankly just astonishing that anyone in 2023 would think that. We have 400,000 medical marijuana patients in the state of Oklahoma, 100,000 people using marijuana over and above that. The idea that every one of those individuals that has kids should have their kids taken away from them by the sole fact that they have, that they're legally possessing and responsibly using marijuana, is really, I feel like that's very dangerous rhetoric for him to throw around. And he should really be ashamed of himself as a lawyer, because, you know, if we were talking about somebody who, you know, maybe just really didn't like 820, maybe they really didn't like marijuana, but they'd never really been involved in the legislative process, they're not a lawyer, you know, and somebody tells them this, I can see how they can repeat that and say, and think that it's true. But Frank Keating's a former FBI agent, U.S. attorney, two-term governor, and still a member of the Oklahoma bar. He's an attorney. So this is a guy who knows better, and he's saying it anyways. And he's saying it with the kind of fervor that we did hear from the Reefer Madness crowd at the early part of the 20th century.
So, you know, this makes me think of the last criminal justice reform ballot measure that came up and failed, you know, largely with the same, like even the Kirkpatrick Foundation, you know, came out and said, well, just the domestic abuse, I haven't read up on it and I can't remember the number, but I hope the
805.
Yeah. Yeah. It just, you know, well, there was some loophole in there for domestic violence victims. Therefore the whole bill should be scrapped. And is your sense that this fear mongering by former Governor Keating, you know, will it be successful or I don't know. I mean, it's just, because you're right. It's astonishing that someone of his credentials, really, you know, and still his standing throughout the state, you know, he's
president of the OU Board of Regents right now.
Exactly. That's what I was about to say. Like, I mean,
this isn't some grandpa that they woke up off the recliner.
Yeah. I mean, he has quite a bit of clout left in the state, you know, like he hasn't retired. Right. You know, but I mean, does that mean he has influence? But then I also think about the fact that it seems like it was a very conscious decision on behalf of the STIT regime
not to place this on the November ballot, even though that's where it rightfully should have been placed. You know, so to bury it in March, or hope maybe they're hoping it's buried in March and people won't turn out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it, the whole fact that we've ended up here, I mean, the adventure to get to March 7th, you know, we should probably, you know, Michelle Tilley and I, the campaign manager, who, I tell you what, just as an aside, one of the best professional and personal phone calls I ever made was to call Michelle Tilley as my very first call when I started putting this deal together, because I knew I didn't want to manage a campaign. You know, I'm not the guy to manage a campaign, but I knew Michelle could do it. And she was at that time working on Medicaid expansion.
Yep. She's got a good track record. Yep.
And so I called her up, and she was, you know, I think that she was like, we're going to do what? And, you know, now 3 years later, here we are, because I mean, we started out with a couple of different initiatives. And then those were, you know, one was scuttled for, again, I don't want to get into ancient history on that. We can do a podcast at some point on the history of, adult use, on this whole adult use marijuana adventure in Oklahoma. But then, you know, the pandemic came along, and then we rebooted with State Question 820, which I think in many ways, having that delay gave us an opportunity to make what we had started so much better in terms of a legislative product. But, you know, just, you know, going back to Keating and, you know, you think about 805, I think that there's, to distinguish 805 and 820, you know, 805 involved sentence enhancements, right? And I think that that's a difficult concept to communicate to a statewide audience. Yes. I mean, so every conversation had to start off with, what is a sentence enhancement? And, you know, who benefited from the sentence enhanced or eliminating these sentence enhancements on certain crimes? Well, it was a small percentage of Oklahomans, you know, even though there were fiscal savings and stuff like that. I mean, it was a, I think a nuanced issue that relied upon just the outright altruism of the electorate. And that's where I think that it fell apart, because when you've got that, I don't mean to say that the electorate isn't altruistic, but when that electorate that, you know, may be predisposed to like, okay, all right, why not? When they start hearing the fear mongering and the last several weeks of a campaign, that's, you know, I think that there wasn't a lot for the 805 campaign to offer back, you know, aside from very nuanced policy conversations about, you know, what this loophole really might mean, or, you know, and that's, you can't have that conversation in a statewide ballot initiative, especially in the final weeks. As complicated as marijuana policy is, you know, 820 can really be boiled down to legalizing marijuana for adults over 21, taxing it, regulating it, and creating a safer product and safer communities for the people of Oklahoma. And we can all see benefits of that. I mean, there's an opportunity for every Oklahoma to see some sort of a benefit in that. So that's where I hope that the fear mongering is a little different. I also think that the fear mongering is harder when you're talking about something that so many Oklahomans already at least have some context for, right? When Terry White goes on TV and starts talking about brain science and it's going to increase, you know, suicidality, and we're, you know, we're all going to become schizophrenic. And no, seriously, I'm not making that up. This is what they're saying. You know, that this is going to increase opioid use, even though most studies show that it declines opioid use. Terry White was trying to tell me that Big Tobacco was behind our ballot initiative because they're behind all marijuana ballot initiatives. We've received $0 from Big Tobacco. And in fact, I think less than 1% of the money that we have raised has come from any one or business that actually makes money in the marijuana industry. You know, this is funded by criminal justice reform organizations and individuals concerned about criminal justice reform. But so they're saying all of these things. And you know, unlike sentence enhancements, where most Oklahomans were like, well, if, you know, maybe I know somebody that's had a sentence. There are a lot of people that had sentence enhancements that didn't know that they'd had a sentence enhancement, or that that's why they had a higher sentence, was because, you know, their plea was negotiated with that sentence enhancement in mind, and they didn't even know it. With marijuana, we can just use our eyeballs. You know, hundreds of thousands of Oklahomans right now are using legal, safe, taxed, regulated cannabis on a regular basis. And just look around, you know, where is, aside from the propaganda machine at OBNDD that are running these stories, which, by the way, like, you know, they keep talking about this place where there are four murders. That was an illegal grow. You know, that was an illegal grow. You want to cut down on the illegal market, you give the people that are going to access marijuana, whether you like it or not, whether folks like marijuana, you give them an option to go purchase from the legal market. That's going to be, you know, there's nothing that's ever going to cut out the black market. It's always going to be there.
I lay at the feet of the legislature, because from the time that medical marijuana was approved by the voters, the legislature was flat-footed. The state house leadership was flat-footed and didn't do anything. It took 4 years to create the Oklahoma Medical Marijuana Authority and take it out from under the health department, you know, to regulate and operate. So many of the problems, it seems to me, are because the legislature was simply behind the curve on this thing. And, you know, and I think it's worth noting, there were 30 other states that had done this before Oklahoma did, and somehow managed to do it apparently more successfully than we have, if you believe the notion that we've somehow become the Wild West of the marijuana industry.
Well, I mean, I might push back on that a little bit. You know, I think that after 788 was passed and it went to the health department to promulgate rules, the health department's you know, initial actions there, I think, really set the stage for the future of marijuana politics in Oklahoma. Because if you'll recall, the health department took 788 and said, well, we know that that's what the law says, but we're going to pass these rules that are marijuana or THC in pill form only. We're going to require a pharmacist in every dispensary. I mean, just like wild stuff that wasn't anywhere in 788. And a bunch of people that had just worked their ass off to pass 788 showed up in large numbers, and they were very loud, and the health department retreated. And I think that it sent a signal to lawmakers. And so that next year, that next legislative session, you saw Republicans and Democrats pass, you know, what was called the Unity Bill, that tried, I think, in good measure to clean up a lot of what 788 was trying to accomplish. 788 wasn't written by a bunch of legislative lawyers that are, you know, skilled at drafting legislation. So I think that with that Unity Bill, you really saw, I think that the legislature put us on the right track. The thing where I think we kind of fell apart was Oklahoma was only one of a few states that had a marijuana program go online without a seed to sale program. And now, so that's a program that tracks marijuana from the time you got a viable plant to the time that it is sold to a patient or consumer. And for the biggest part of our medical marijuana program, the way that licensees reported their inventories was, and sometimes folks would just send these things in handwritten, right? There are monthly inventories that they submitted to OMMA. And then you had OMMA under the Department of Health. And so their administrative enforcement arm was also kind of cumbersome, because they were trying to, you know, navigate this enormous administrative system within one of the largest state agencies. So I feel like they were kind of tied there. But they did, you know, so the state did in December of 2020, select a vendor for a seed to sale provider. And, you know, full disclosure, I'm the state registered lobbyist for Metric, that is the vendor to the state for seed to sale tracking. They selected that in December of 2020. Metric was ready to go April 2021. The state was ready to go April 2021. And when I say ready to go, ready for mandatory compliance. Every licensee was going to have to begin using this closed loop system to track marijuana. And no more, you know, just written inventories without any sort of verification. Well, a lawyer out of Tulsa and, you know, a handful of marijuana licensees who really just preferred to kind of keep doing it the old way and not have this closed loop system, they sued. They sued the state and they sued Metric, and they got an injunction that kept Metric from going into effect until May of 2022. So we've only had what I believe to be the most important regulatory tool. It's not the only one, but I think it's the most important regulatory tool online in Oklahoma since May of 2022. And that's why I think 820 is different, because we'll start day one with seed to sale.
But that's where I'm pointing out 2021, poised and ready to finally implement that in 2021, was still 3 years after the vote. And I guess where I sort of, and I understand you don't know what you don't know, but and experience is a great teacher on these things. But it seems to me that if you had forward-thinking leadership at 23rd and Lincoln, when that thing was approved for the ballot, you would have had people saying, we need to start a study group. We need to get ready. If this thing passes, we need to be ready from day one to deal with this. And all of a sudden, for it to kind of get, I'll use an old man's phrase, whopper jawed, you know, like it did before you finally decide, oh, we need a seed to sale way to track this, seems to be slow.
Well, I think this. The good news is,
you know, today.
I think, the good news is there that I think a lot of lawmakers have learned their lesson. They've learned that lesson. So I think, two things there. One, OMMA is now a standalone agency, which I think is incredibly important. They have what I believe to be, great leadership and Director Adria Berry. And frankly, if, watching the November election, if Joy Hoffmeister had won that November election, the first thing I would have asked of Joy Hoffmeister, whenever I reached out to congratulate her, would have been keep Adria Berry on as director at OMMA, because she is a great leader there and we need consistency. So OMMA, they're a state agency. They are very politically astute. They are not doing anything at all to send any signals that they are for or against 820. But I know for a fact that OMMA is already working on what will it take for us from a rulemaking standpoint to begin to implement State Question 820. They will have 90 days. If it passes, they'll have 90 days to roll out their first set of rules. I think that we'll see those rules probably within a month. That would be my guess. Now, the other thing is that the legislature, kind of like you said, Arnold, I think that, rather than, waiting around, it's like, folks, we need to have study groups on these things. We need to be ready for this. Just this week in the legislature, House Bill 1717 was passed by the chair, T.J. Marty, of the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Controlled Substances Committee, which sounds like the most fun committee to be on. I don't smoke or drink a lot, but whatever. I don't smoke at all and drink very little, but it still sounds fun. That committee passed House Bill 1717 that basically takes the entirety of the Oklahoma Marijuana Code in Title 63, and where everywhere it says medical marijuana, it says or adult use marijuana. And so they're already kind of building the statutory framework so that there will be consistency in all of the existing law before they even start thinking about what they might want to do with the rest of it. I think that, you know, that to me gives me a lot of confidence. And it's one of the reasons that we decided this time to do a statutory measure. You know, initially when we were pursuing this, we were looking at a constitutional measure. But you know, we began to see a lot of confidence and like, all right, there is a strong bipartisan group of lawmakers that are interested in this cannabis policy and that, you know, want to get it right and aren't out there trying to sabotage it. And like with the 30 states that we had with medical to learn from, we've got 21 other states from adult use, recreational to learn from. And I may have said this already, but I think it's so important. 21 states, not a single one of them has ever said, oh man, we don't want to do that anymore. They've not changed their mind, you know, so, and they've had every opportunity. You know, we got 21 states, any one of those states at any point could have been like, nope, we're done with this. And they just haven't, you know, they've kept their programs. You know, I think that, you know, going back to the kind of the reefer madness and like the negative stuff that Marianne was talking about, and especially in terms of, you know, how it might affect us versus the 805, that's part of that experience, right? I mean, we can look around and see, well, all of these things that they say marijuana makes people do, where is it, right? And if it is happening, it's happening in the illegal, illicit, unregulated, unenforced, untaxed market. It's not happening in the legal market the way that they're, you know, that's a huge difference. And then we can look to these 21 other states. If you drive into Colorado right now, you know, you don't just drive into some dystopian hellscape. You know, it's just not. The difference is that you go to Colorado and they've had hundreds of millions of dollars to invest in education and healthcare that we just don't have right now. And, you know, thinking about, there are a lot of things that, you know, if 820 passes, that I'm most excited about. But when we got we knew that it was going to generate revenue. But when we had when we first saw that fiscal analysis, you know, the idea of $100 million annually recurring going into our state budget, you know, of course, we gotta, you know, hope that the legislature spends it all wisely, or at least some of it wisely. You know, that's going to be out of our immediate control at least. But, you know, what that could be like, that could be, you know, investments that change things for a generation or more in the state of Oklahoma. And that's certainly, when we saw that, again, we knew that there were going to be revenue associated with it, but criminal justice was what was really driving us. We saw that revenue though, and we thought, you know, we've really got to get this done. Because, you know, we see so many things in Oklahoma that need funding. You know, when we passed 780 in 2016, there was 781 that went along with it. 781 required that savings from the state of Oklahoma that they saved from what would otherwise have gone to incarcerating Oklahomans for these felonies, that those were to be collected and then redistributed to the counties for things like substance abuse and mental health services. There's been about, you know, 10 million of that that's been spent. And even then it wasn't called 781 funds or 781 savings. So, you know, I kind of look at it as zero that we have taken. You know, it's been, you know, we're going on 7 years now since we passed, almost 7 years since we passed 780. And we've had zero 781 investments made. Office of Management Enterprise Services last year in Oklahoma, the main fiscal analysis body in the state, they finally released a number of how much State Question 780 has saved the state of Oklahoma up to 2022. And I think it was like $87 million. But, you know, so the legislature sees this savings, but where, you know, savings don't necessarily mean that there's money, because whenever when you're running on fumes anyways, just because we've saved $87 million in DOC and elsewhere, That's not like the money just like shows up in a bank account somewhere. So it has to be appropriated.
Mm-hmm.
And where does that money get appropriated from right now? And I think that if we can pass state question 820, there is, you know, kind of this immediate funding path where some of that money can go into that 781 fund, make good on that promise. But we also know that it immediately will deliver, you know, funding for services and not just in Oklahoma and Tulsa County. And, you know, that we definitely need them here, but in places like where I'm from in Seminole and in rural Oklahoma, where, you know, we desperately need to have those services for those folks out there.
Well, we could probably keep this going for quite a while now, but that seems to me to be a reasonable place to tee it up for the voters to get off their duffs on Tuesday and vote on this thing. Yeah. I keep harkening when I think about Frank Keating and the, you know, the Farm Bureau and the ranchers and cattlemen and so forth who are carping about this thing. Maybe I don't get out enough or as much as I should, but it sure seems like a lot of that's aimed at rural Oklahoma and trying to spur a turnout there in rural Oklahoma. But I'm not so sure that that's not a fool's errand in the sense that I hearken back. I think it was that great philosopher Willie Nelson who said that marijuana is the one thing that unites hillbillies and hippies. And so maybe it's,
hey, you know, I tell you,
that isn't a sure thing after all.
So, you know, I served in the House from 04 to 10 and represented all of Seminole County, northern Pottawatomie, southwest Lincoln, and western Okefenokee counties. And one of the things that I wanted to do with my time in the legislature was to bring economic development and jobs to these rural communities because they were struggling and still struggle. And I joke, but only kind of joke, that, I mean, we were thrilled when we got a combo A&W Long John Silver's in Seminole during my time. I mean, but it was a big deal. We got a Taco Bell during my time in the legislature. I didn't have anything to do with it, but, you know, I'll let, but it's, that was a big deal. And, you know, now I look at, you know, what's happened with these jobs in rural Oklahoma. You know, marijuana jobs aren't just concentrated in Oklahoma City and Tulsa. They are in all 77 counties. They are in towns large and small, and they are paying their employees well. I was at a processor, a marijuana processor in Beggs, Oklahoma, which is Okefenokee County, just north of where my old district border was. And, you know, I went up there and walked into this processing facility, and there were people, you know, starting at $12+ an hour. They had 401ks, they had health insurance, they had an employer that was investing in their training. And many of them just lived in the community. They weren't having to drive to Tulsa or Broken Arrow or Oklahoma City to go work. They were able to work in their community and stay in their community. And then the other thing is, right after the first time I went and visited this place, drove a little bit around in town and pulled into a diner. The diner was just hopping. And well, half the people there were people from that marijuana processing plant that were there on their lunch break to go get some food. I mean, the ripple effect that this has had for jobs in rural Oklahoma, I think that that's what a lot of Oklahomans see, right? I mean, we hear a lot of complaints about, well, this has driven up my property value. I think that that cuts both ways. And my mom lives out between Seminole and Wewoka. And, you know, if somebody came and, you know, she is thrilled that the land that she lives on right now, if she needed to, you know, sell that and move at some point, she could, you know, sell it and make better money than she could than in, you know, 2016 or 2017. That's kind of like me. The house that I'm in Oklahoma City, it's worth more now than whenever I bought it. And that's a good thing in many respects. So this idea that we're that this is anti-rural Oklahoma, you know, when we talk about things like water and infrastructure, those are legitimate concerns. And we need to be thoughtful about how we deal with that. But I've had people seem to suggest to me that, well, this is going to just create a lot more, you know, too many customers for the electric grid. And we're going to have to, well, of course, progress and growth require investments in infrastructure. And that's, we've had to do that from the very beginning. If we didn't, you know, all Oklahoma City would be a few dirt roads down by the Santa Fe Depot. We eventually had to build streets and, you know, dig sewer lines and water lines and power. That's what you do as a state. To me, that's exciting. The idea of progress and development and investment and huge investments. These processing facilities and these growth, the technology and innovation, when you walk into these things, is incredible. And these are $1 million+ investments going into small towns that, you know, up until a few years ago were, you know, popping champagne corks over the a combo A&W Long John Silvers. This is a big deal for rural Oklahoma. So I think that they see that.
I feel like you're kind of hitting the nail on the head, and I do not want to take away from like the upward, you know, hopeful momentum here of this conversation, but, you know, $12 an hour at a grow facility or processing plant is, you know, a 401k returning to the community. Well, that's just not the same as having to pay someone $2 an hour when they're in prison for, you know, criminalizing everything. Right. I mean, it's just such a, returning value to the state just turns in a way that is beneficial and is true growth really kinds of really turns on its head the model that has been in place in Oklahoma for so many decades. Just, you know, let's criminalize, let's cheapen labor, let's keep people poor and downtrodden versus lifting them up and, you know, making them self-sufficient again. So I don't want to lean into that language about self-sufficiency because I very much believe in kind of collect, you know, the social contract and collective endeavors. But, you know, it's just, I mean, you can see all the reasons why they would be scared of something like this. The DA's councils, all of them, you know what I mean? Just like through and through, you see where the pressure points are for them.
Yeah. Well, the Tulsa Chamber, you know, whenever they came out in opposition to this, they said that it was a workforce issue. Now, one of the things that they'll say, oh, well, you know, too many people are testing positive for THC and we can't test whether or not they are actually under the influence. Well, number one, if you got a medical card, you've got some rights with your employers. If you don't have a medical card and your employer wants to have a strict, you know, zero tolerance drug policy, they still get to do that. I think that those policies are a mistake unless they're absolutely necessary. Mm-hmm. But marijuana, you know, marijuana isn't any different than, say, Xanax or Percocet. I can't take a test and tell whether somebody's actually under the influence of, you know, Xanax that they're not prescribed or something.
My anxiety medicine gives me a pretty nice buzz too, so I probably shouldn't have that at work. You know, I mean, it's
right. Yeah,
stuff that's really like legit. I mean, legit.
Really, I think that the you know, that comes from like drug dealers, like my wife at CVS. You know, she's
drug dealer.
She's very appreciative you threw in CVS, by the way.
Well, it doesn't. I mean, you know, maybe the stock price goes up. Who knows? But the Tulsa Chamber. I mean, I think that when they were talking about workforce, the other thing that they were talking about was just what you said, Marianne. They don't want to have to compete, which is wild to me that I have become just the spokesperson for capitalism and the free market.
Right.
But you know what?
You still got to pay bills, right? And if we can help people keep the lights on and food on the table, then let's do it, right?
And this is doing it.
Until we can upend that system completely, let's do it.
That's right.
Right? Beat them at their own game. So, anyways, all right. So we have a big vote on Tuesday. This will come out on Monday, so, you know, we need everyone to go to the polls. I'm not a marijuana smoker. I've never smoked it, but I will support this simply for all the reasons you just said. I want fewer people in jail. But, you know, let's return the value to our land and to the people of the state of Oklahoma. Like, let's make their labor worth something. So we need everyone to show up to the ballot. Don't do what you do and just have, you know, a measly 50, 60, 70 people in some cases show up. You know, just, I know you guys were watching voting results for what the city council and the school board, you know, just this past month. And it's just horrifying how few people show up. But again, this is our chance.
This is our chance. And if we don't show up, if medical patients like myself think, well, I've got mine, so who cares? If that doesn't happen and people are thinking just like you are, even if they don't like marijuana, but they like what it's going to do for the state, what this is going to do for the state, you know, we just got to show up. And I truly believe that if Oklahomans will show up at the ballot box on this deal on Tuesday, we're going to win. But the other thing is that we know that the no side's going to be there. I can tell you, you know, we've looked at intensity markers and trying to study the electorate, and the people that are against this, they're going to be there on Tuesday. I can promise you. And so we've got to show up too.
Absolutely. All right, let's get it done. Brian, thank you so much for your time. We know you're busy. I'm so glad we were able to get more time with you than we had originally scheduled. So have a good weekend. I know it'll be busy. Give Michelle Tilley our best regards. Tell her we said hello. And
I will.
We'll see you. We'll all be watching results on Tuesday.
Watch Party at the Tower Theater.
Nice.
Party at the Tower Theater.
Yeah, awesome. Cool. All right. See you later, Ryan.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to this episode of ObserverCast. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends about us and share our episodes far and wide on social media. If you're interested in sponsoring ObserverCast, please give Arnold Hamilton a call at 405-478-8700 or drop him an email at ahamilton@okobserver.org. You can also support ObserverCast with a tax-deductible donation to the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation, whose mission is to help create a better, more informed Oklahoma. And to help keep us on the air, visit okobserver.org and click on the donate button on the upper right side of the homepage. We also urge you to subscribe to the Oklahoma Observer, now in its 55th year of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. We have a special digital subscription rate for ObserverCast listeners, only $1.99 a month for the first year. That's 50% off the usual rate for monthly digital subscribers. Just use the coupon code ObserverCast when checking out to get the discount rate. And finally, we want to thank Jared Deck for the music you're listening to in the background here. He's not just the resident of Norman anymore. He is now the Oklahoma State Representative for House District 44. Congratulations, Representative Deck. We're so proud of you. But you can still download his albums at iTunes and learn more, including dates for any upcoming performances at jareddeckmusic.com.